Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
So, the Oilers, this long, hideous odyssey of the 2018-19 season is over, Bruce, except for struggling through three more games. And it ended in massive frustration for the fans and for Connor McDavid. I'll just read you McDavid's quotes, Bruce, since...
I missed them. What'd you say?
After the game, he was just asked about it all, and he said the following. About being eliminated, he didn't know they were eliminated, but he said, it sucks, obviously. We weren't good enough all year. We let streaks drag on. We let times when we couldn't find ways to get wins drag on. You got to find a way to stop the bleeding quick. It's a slim margin of error in this league. Then he said, it's been an insane season. The coaching change, GM change, you know, good times and bad times. It's been a roller coaster. It's been emotionally challenging. It's been hard mentally to keep going.
True.
But we were always kind of right there. We were close, but drift away. We were close, but drift away. Hope that's not an allusion to McDavid's relationship to the Edmonton Oilers franchise.
Yeah, really.
I'm not surprising at all to see him bitterly disappointed. This is just, it's just been, I mean, the Chiarelli era has been in the end marked by disaster. And
Chiarelli error?
The Chiarelli error. I won't ever hear the phrase bitterly. Heavy hockey again in my life.
He laughed bitterly.
All right.
Bitter myself, David. I'm not getting any younger.
I don't know, Bruce. You only look about, 42.
Yeah.
Maybe not tonight. It's a night when all of our age and weariness and crabbiness and fatigue and tiredness shows. So this is the two good things, two bad things, 200 bad things, and two numbers podcast. On the Oilers 3-1 loss to Vegas, Bruce, what was your good thing?
Yeah, searching long and hard, but I have to go with one, maybe two glimpses of Connor McDavid late in the first period. Maybe it was in the second period now that I think about it. One where the Oilers were trapped in their own end yet again, chasing the cycle. But McDavid read the play and jumped the pass behind his own net, picked off the pass. His natural direction took him right towards the checker, but he just slammed on the brakes as only he can, reversed. He made about a 60-foot lead pass to Zach Cassian at the blue line. Cassian went through the neutral zone. By the time he dropped it back to McDavid, McDavid was maybe 15 feet behind him. He like just zoomed over, overtaken the entire gap and charged into the zone, and nothing came of it. But the whole way the play got reversed and the puck got going in the right direction. It was such a refreshing change from really most of the game. Then McDavid had another shift a bit later where he almost banked the puck into the net off of Subban two different times. He used to do that a lot in junior, and I've noticed lately he's finally picked up on that old trick. And the NHL goalies are a little craftier at sealing off the net. Most of them are, but every once in a while he'll get one like that. And he tried it there a couple times, and it nearly worked, and he got the goal. So he's going to be my good thing for this game. And imagine watching this team without him. I mean, to put it that way,
in stark terms. So he's got 114 points, or 115 points. I guess they haven't updated it.
Yeah,
115 points. Okay, my good thing, and maybe it's because my expectations have been lowered so much, but I thought Mikko Koskinen had made a couple nice saves. I mean, the two goals he let in were both kind of rancid.
Squiffy?
Oh, God. They break your back, especially the first one, the outside shot.
Yeah, you just got to have that.
You just got to have. Come on, make the save, man. What is wrong with you? Anyway, I'm not here to attack him.
He did make some nice saves.
He did, though. They had 9 grade A scoring chances in that game, which is a healthy number. 2 goals on 9 grade A scoring chances is a an average to an above average night, even for an NHL goalie. And I think Koskinen, I gave him a 5. If the 2 goals that went in weren't so horrible, he could have had a 6. Maybe he should have deserved a 4 because the 2 goals that went in. The one by Marchessault was the backhander is an unpredictable shot, and I have some sympathy on that one. But the Cody Eakin's goal was so bad that even Louis DeBrusque, who never says anything about a player by name, hardly ever singled out Koskinen for criticism on the play. So you know that things are getting bad when even Louis DeBrusque starts to call you out. You know you've been stinking it out. But this is my good thing. So he did make some really good saves.
And kept him in the game. I mean, Rob Brown was saying on the post game, he's the only reason they came within a post to tying it at the end, and they really did come close to tying it. But Rob said, and I agreed with him, it would have been an undeserved point for the Oilers.
Oh, totally. What was your bad thing, Bruce?
Well, am I allowed to say the entire hockey game? I mean, the first period of that game was execrable. It was horrible to watch. I mean, Las Vegas iced the puck, it seemed like once a minute. The game had absolutely no flow whatsoever. And I think when you look back at the stats, that was the Oilers' best period. I think they had 2 of their 3 grade A scoring chances in the first period. And they kind of went downhill from there in terms of generating anything. But they
had nothing in the last half of the game.
Vegas's approach was just to snuff everything out at the source. And, I mean, it worked well, but it's almost unwatchable. You know, that was a very, very hard game to watch. And related bad thing, I guess, is every time Vegas did ice the puck, there was 2 or 3 opportunities where they had a tired line out there, 3rd or 4th line, ice the puck. Oilers send McDavid and Draisaitl over the boards against tired bottom sixers, you know, lower defense pairings. Great opportunity. Lose the bloody faceoff every time. Man, it just drives me nuts. You got to win those draws. You got to win those draws. Those are like crucial plays in the game when you have the other team at a matchup disadvantage because of an icing. You just got to find a way to get the puck and make them pay for their mistake.
My bad thing, Bruce. And you gave away my number, which was 3.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. 3 grade A chances for the Oilers this game. I mean, that is horrendous. That is horrendous. You should be getting, you know, on average, you get about 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. In the NHL's kind of amped up the number of grade A chances this year. I think the Oilers probably, I haven't worked it out lately, but they're probably closer to 10 or 11 this year. And 3 is, that is just wretched. And but it was completely, you know, earned. This team has an embarrassment of non-riches on the attack. And that's include, you know, they have these 3 fabulous attackers, but so my bad thing, Bruce, is the Oilers take out Brodziak, Reeder, and Kara from the game. All richly deserved demotions, by the way. I mean, Brodziak and Reeder shouldn't have been playing in the last half of the year, frankly. Brodziak shouldn't have been playing after the first 20 games. And Reeder shouldn't have been playing in the second half. They replaced 3 players who have a total of 9 goals in 194 games this year, with Malone, Ratty, and Curry, who have 6 goals in 77 games. I just see a typo in my game grades here. Six goals in 77 games. So, Bruce, they're replacing bad with, or they're replacing worse with bad. And the results are what they are. This team is so desperate, for young players to step up. And I know that I'm going on and on and on about Benson and Marody making the team. And part of that is just out of desperation, because the Oilers are desperate for more skill and players who can make a play, who can make a play with the bloody puck. And they just do not have that.
Well, the 3 guys that got inserted into the lineup tonight combined for 0 shots on net. Last game I ranted in the post-game podcast about how 7 of the Oilers' 12 forwards had 0 shots on net. Tonight they cut that down to merely 6 forwards who had 0 shots on net. Half the bloody forwards without a single shot. And it's just who you might think. Irati, Malone, Lucic, Curry, Gambardella, and the one surprise, Nugent Hopkins, who usually gets a number of shots. But basically bottom 6 all the way through, and the bottom 6 generated nothing. Nothing.
Could they pay Lucic's bonus then buy him out? I mean, they're going to have to do something with him. He can't come back next year. And a lot like, but Brodziak can't come back. You know, Reader's not coming back. All these guys, they just got to clean house and they got to do whatever they can to find some more skilled hockey players.
Well, as I said last game, Lucic's contract is the four horsemen of the apocalypse, right? He's got too much term, too much average annual value, no move clause, and it's buyout proof by all the bonuses that were put into it. Like literally, Chiarelli's got the Oilers cornered on every front with Lucic's contract. There's no way to get rid of it without basically eating all the salary. Yeah, you said it. There's nothing to say.
What is your number, Bruce?
Well, I got a whole series of numbers, and I don't want to pick on one player particularly, but this is so spectacular that it's worthy of mention. This is Joseph Gambardella, who I like and who has impressed me throughout most of his time up here. But boy, tonight he was in over his head. He played 7 minutes and 34 seconds, and the only stat of any kind he put up was a shot block. What was more impressive was his on-ice results. In just 7.5 minutes, the Oilers attempted 2 shots, Vegas 17. For unblocked shot attempts, it was 0 for the Oilers, 12 for the Vegans. For actual shots, it was 0-8. For scoring chances, it was 0-8. And for high-danger scoring chances, which is similar somewhat to the stuff we count, 0-7. That's in 7 minutes of action.
Plus that line change. That line change was totally on him, Bruce. Like I know Hitchcock was, you could lip read him. He was cursing up a storm, but that was on Gambardella. He went for the puck.
He was indecisive for a split second.
Yeah, but Bruce, he went for the puck enough that the Vegas player had to dodge him. Okay. And another player was on the ice. That is too many men. That was a correct call by the official, and that was on Gambardella because he signaled to come off, and then he thought, oop, I'm going to make a play. Like, he just, as a coach, I don't know, like Hitchcock seemed to be swearing at the ref, but he could have been swearing at Gambardella because that was on the player.
Yeah, and he just wasn't with it tonight, and he, you know, he looked out of his league, literally.
He did, and that was the first game where he really looked that bad. I mean, it's hard to get going with 7 minutes of ice time, but this is one of these where you certainly didn't earn more. Well, Bruce, let's leave it there.
You had a number that was 3. Okay.
3.
And the Oilers actually got 2 power plays tonight. First time in 8 games. Mind you, the second power play, there was only 40 seconds left in the game, so it wasn't really an entire power play, but at least we got to start. Two man advantages in the same game. So maybe things are looking up.
And I saw Sam Gagne. That was the tip by him at the end there, putting it off the post.
Oh, right across the goal line. Right across the goal line.
But as Rob Brown was saying, and you mentioned, if the Oilers had gotten a point. And you know what, Bruce, at this
point, playing for lottery position nowadays.
They are.
Regulation losses, it's not the worst possible outcome. I'd rather we saw a decent game in the process, mind you, but.
Yeah, we can all put on our GM hat now and think, oh, well, you know, if they lose. So they're right now, they are 24 out of 31 teams with the possibility of the Oilers have 77 points. Anaheim has 76 and the Rangers have 75. Canucks have 78. So there's going to be some jumping around there.
They're right around 8, 9, 10.
The Oilers could be as low as 6th. Mm-hmm. And as high as 7, 8, 9, 9, 6. They'll be somewhere in the 6 to 9 range unless they win the lottery. You know, these little incremental movements can be really significant. You know, players often will castigate a GM for not getting a second or a third round draft pick in a trade. Mm-hmm. But the difference in value of a pick between, you know, 9 and 6, I think it can be about the same as a third or second round draft pick. Well,
last year they won game 82 in the shootout. And it cost them 2 spots in the draft lottery, and I was cursing about that outcome. And then they wound up getting basically the guy they needed anyway, that they probably would have took if they'd have been picking a little earlier. So, I mean, sometimes it washes out, but usually, like, definitely you'd rather be picking. You'd rather be 6th or 7th than 9th or 10th, for sure.
Yeah, so who went? It was Boqvist, Adam Boqvist, who went.
He went 8th, yeah.
Who went 9? Just before, was it Wahlstrom, or was that just
Wahlstrom
after?
Wahlstrom went 11th. And the other
Kravtsov,
oh yeah,
went to the Rangers. So they, like, he's a lot of people are really excited about him still.
Mm-hmm. Well, Quinn Hughes. Maybe so, but the Oilers were in the market for one of those righty defensemen, and it
yeah, I was thrilled too. Yeah, the two guys. It'll be interesting to see who pans out. It always is interesting. It's absolutely crucial, of course, that the Oilers, that Bouchard becomes a player. Oh, they need him, Bruce. That blew
yeah,
up.
They need a few players, David.
They need do.
A few players. The half dozen decent players they got are better than decent. Look, bagged. They had not a lot of juice going tonight, I can tell you.
Well, out of Marody, Benson, and Yamamoto, they need one of those guys. Okay. And if you include Puljujärvi, maybe they even need two of those guys. It's mm-hmm. going to be hard. Like, they're up against the cap. There's not a lot of options here. Yeah. So they and out of Jones, Lagesson, Bear, Pearson, and Bouchard, they probably need two of those guys. And, you know, I'm talking about 6, 7 D-men, and I'm talking about third line forwards with the chance of moving up. Mm-hmm. But those players all, I think, represent a considerable increase in skill or a somewhat increase in skill over what they have going on now. And they also, I think, need the right coach. We've just seen altogether too much of Lucic on a top line, even under Hitchcock. That really makes me question his judgment. And we certainly saw that under McClellan. So I just want to see, a different approach, and I want to see different players, which makes me part of the majority of 100% Oiler fans. There's not one Oiler fan saying, yeah, they should stick with who they got.
Yeah, well, in the immortal words of Craig McTavish, you've got too many guys that the best you can hope for is they break even.
Yeah.
And it's still a problem. It's been a problem the whole time.
Yeah.
They got to do something about this pro scouting, I think. Like, that's been a disaster for this team for years and years.
Well, they covered themselves in you know, horse manure this year with their work. It's hard to find a move other than maybe the Chase on signing that worked out. You know, I guess Koskinen at $2.5 million arguably was okay, but other than that, it's just been a disaster. Just one terrible move after the next, and we were also hopeful, man. We were also hopeful because we're fans.
Yeah,
that's how we roll. Thanks for talking, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. Right back at it tomorrow night with another thriller in Mile High City. We'll see if there's any energy left for that tomorrow. But we're with you thick and thin through to the end, which is definitively now Saturday night. We're done.
Thank goodness. And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.